Infrastructure with a twist. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. President Biden is expected to outline a massive new proposal for infrastructure spending in an address in Pittsburgh today. The plan is reportedly going to go way beyond the usual roads and bridges to focus on combating climate change. So, for example, dramatically expanding the nation's network of electric vehicle charging stations. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
A couple years ago, Leo Tuza was seriously considering buying an electric vehicle. He found some great deals on used ones, but he rents an apartment in Portland, Oregon, and has to park on the street.
Where do I charge it? If they just had like a few chargers on every block or something, that helps.
But they don't, so he bought a gas car instead. Lack of access to chargers is one of the top barriers to electric vehicle adoption, says analyst Sam Abu El-Samad at Guidehouse Insights.
You want a consistent network that's just widely distributed.
Auto industry groups have pushed the White House to prioritize charging infrastructure to help boost EV sales. Charging availability has increased in many places, but varies widely, says Ethan Elkind at UC Berkeley.
Any electric vehicle driver who's looked on a map to see where the charging stations are, you can pretty readily identify some parts of the U.S. where there's a real missing infrastructure.
Auto trade groups say there are around 100,000 public charging outlets across the country. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
H&M is trying to recover from an uproar in China. The clothing retailer last year announced on its website that it would no longer source cotton from Xinjiang, a province where the U.S. and other governments accused China of holding a million minority Uyghurs in forced labor camps, something China denies. Chinese consumers boycotted the store. It was removed from a major e-commerce platform, even taken off online maps. The company reported a quarterly loss and released a statement today saying it was dedicated to regaining the trust of Chinese consumers. H&M is not the only brand dealing with this problem. Adidas and Nike have also been targeted after the U.S. and EU sanctioned Chinese officials. Joining us to talk about this is Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pack in Shanghai. Good morning.
Hi, Sabri.
This sounds like a very difficult situation for foreign brands in China.
It is, but if you look at the level of boycott, it's not uniform across all brands. So most of the consumer vitriol is aimed at H&M rather than Nike and Adidas, which have a far bigger presence in China. Some Chinese landlords, they had shut H&M locations in smaller Chinese cities. Apple and Baidu Maps, rideshare app Didi, Chinese e-commerce sites, they've deleted H&M from their databases. But that's not happening to Adidas and Nike. Yes, they've had celebrities in China cancel endorsement deals, but that's about it so far.
What is the long-term impact of these boycotts on brands?
Well, usually they bounce back, especially if there's no domestic substitute like the NBA. But if the Chinese central government steps in, like it did for South Korean supermarket giant Lotte, where many of its shops were shut for fire safety code violations, then the company has to exit China. Now, China says most of its cotton is harvested with machines, not forced labor. If the U.S. and EU continue to press and penalize China over this, foreign companies might have to choose a side, use Xinjiang cotton or be locked out of the world's second largest economy.
Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pack in Shanghai, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sabri.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.3%. The Dow future is down 43 points. That's 0.1%. S&P futures up 0.1%. NASDAQ futures up 0.6%. The 10-year treasury yield is at 1.725%. As many Americans celebrate Easter and Passover this week, consider this. For the first time, people who belong to a church, synagogue, or mosque are in the minority in the U.S., under 50% of the adult population, according to Gallup. And that is not just because of the pandemic somehow. Empty pews can mean empty collection plates for churches. Same goes for other religious organizations. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports.
When the pandemic shut down Spirit of Life Presbyterian Church in Minnesota last March, Pastor Rob Smith suddenly faced a bunch of logistical problems.
Our goal in the beginning was love your neighbor, stay home, wear your mask. But yet, how do we be a church in this quick change that happened overnight?
The answer, of course, was Zoom. He's still holding most services this way. But financially, that made things tough. The church wasn't collecting money from weddings or community groups that usually rent the space, and there was no way to pass around the offering plate, though Smith did try drive-in worship.
I think it presents better from our homes, from our screens, than it has from the back of my pickup truck in our parking lot.
David King, who directs the Lake Institute on Faith and Giving at Indiana University, says smaller institutions have struggled most.
Larger congregations were more likely to receive payroll protection program loans, and they were also better resourced to shift to live stream services as well as digital giving formats.
But lower attendance during COVID is a temporary problem. Membership overall has been declining for years, including among young people. Only about 35% of millennials belong to a church, synagogue, or mosque, compared to just over 50% a decade ago. Amy Asen is with the Union for Reform Judaism. She says one way congregations are reaching out to younger people is by participating in events around racial injustice.
If we can stop thinking about how do I get people to show up for services and start thinking about how can we help bring the Torah to people's lives in ways that help them answer those questions? I think we can be very relevant.
For Pastor Rob Smith in Minnesota, being virtual had an unexpected benefit. Current members encouraged new ones to join from Iowa, Wisconsin, and New York. Donations went up, and he plans to stay on Zoom even when things go back to normal. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.